presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I kind of sense a little bit of angst in the air as Georgia gets ready for Texas A&M on Saturday. First of all, it may rain, which is obviously kind of a throwback to the horrible conditions that Georgia played Kentucky in a few weeks ago. But beyond that, I just think it's the nature of this game that sort of sets up a little anxiety among Dog Nation. And I mean the fans who make up Dog Nation, not necessarily DogNation.com or Dog Nation Daily here, although admittedly as a UGA fan, I'm also a bit nervous about this one myself. I think it kind of comes down to two things. First of all, Georgia playing what is on paper a somewhat losable game is actually kind of a rarity, right? Over the course of the last 3 years, Georgia's winning all of its SEC East games by two touchdowns or more. Now, they were upset a little earlier this year. You can't deny that. But for the most part, Georgia's handling its business within conference. Tech's not really much of a threat to Georgia, at least since 2017. Auburn's been kind of an easy win for Georgia, not so much this past Saturday. But for the most part, Georgia's just been kind of taking care of its business, so the idea of going into a Saturday where you think, ooh, Georgia might lose, that's a little bit of a rarity. But A&M, based on the way it's been kind of playing lately, certainly kind of brings that to mind a bit of, hey, Georgia better have its chin strap buckled up or the Aggies may cause some trouble. Georgia better have its game face on or Texas A&M may be ready for them. I understand where that's coming from. There's also kind of the weird oddity of the fact that in most seasons, and I mean going back decades and decades and decades, once Georgia got past Auburn, for the most part, with all due respect to a Georgia Tech, for the most part, there could be a little bit of an exhale, right? It's like, that's your big, tough, late November game. And then after that, it's either get ready for the SEC championship or start talking about which kind of bowl you're going to go to. But the big Auburn showdown was the last really big one because in most years, Tech's just not very good. But this year, because of the way the schedule falls, playing Texas A&M this late in the season, while Texas A&M's not ranked by the College Football Playoff Selection Committee, I don't think there's any doubt in my mind anyway that the Aggies are one of the 25 best teams in the country. So the game is just kind of tough, right? It's a game I expected Georgia to win, but do I think it'll be closer than Vegas thinks it probably will be? Vegas calling for about a 2-touchdown win for the Dogs. I think there's a chance it could be a good bit closer than that. And that kind of angst, I think, exists among Dog Nation as well. However, let me kind of pitch this a different way, though. That the game against Texas A&M is not necessarily something that Georgia fans ought to be nervous about, I think really provides an opportunity for UGA, both for the fans and the team itself. For the fans, I think this kind of comes down to a chance to sort of silence some doubters, right? I mean, Georgia fans never like it when people are kind of outside the boundaries of the Dog Nation, kind of maybe doubting Georgia, saying bad things about Georgia. And another good performance, what I think is obviously a quality opponent. They've only lost to, top 10 national championship type contending teams, elite type teams, Auburn included. That's all Texas A&M has lost to. So a chance to go out and collect another win against a team like that, I think is a resume bolstering performance for Georgia and another clapback, if you'll permit me to use that phrase, another clap back against those who might otherwise say, I'm not quite so sure about Georgia right now. And let me kind of give you a little bit of the recent chronicling of some of the I'm not so sure about Georgia talk that's out there. First of all, apparently Las Vegas not so sure about Georgia right now. Caesar's Palace has apparently already got some look-ahead lines, at least for fodder and discussion about what might happen for Georgia and potential playoff matchups. They've got Georgia as a 7-point underdog right now to Ohio State, a 7-point underdog right now to Clemson, and a 3.5-point underdog in the SEC championship to LSU. Now, I actually believe by the time that game gets here, LSU may be a slightly larger favorite than that, but nonetheless, you get the sense here of the teams currently ranked among the top four. Vegas, at least the Caesars Palace, according to CFB Kings on College Football, whatever they may know about all this, they say that Caesars Palace says that Georgia would be an underdog against all of those teams. And at least according to some analysts, kind of more of the sort of low rent, sort of dark corner of the TV world analysis, apparently they think that makes all the sense in the world for Georgia to be a point spread underdog against all these teams, Clemson and LSU and Ohio State. In fact, Ryan Leaf, who you may remember as the biggest bust in NFL draft history and otherwise kind of a mess, now working at ESPN as an analyst, apparently at least on some deep overnight TV spot doing something. Well, he was on TV recently and he said that he thinks that Georgia's actually the worst team in the top four all the way around. Leaf, the former Wazoo quarterback, going in pretty hard on the Dogs, even more so than Caesars Palace, who's got Georgia as an underdog. Leaf says that is with good reason. Here's Ryan Leaf.
I think them at four was absurd. They have the worst loss you can imagine. South Carolina beat them at home. South Carolina just lost to Appalachian State this weekend. They lost to North Carolina at the beginning of the year. So that for me is a position that I don't think is warranted right now. The two wins that they have over Florida and Notre Dame, those don't outweigh the bad loss for me. If anything, they may be one of the worst one-loss teams that are there, and I'd expect to see something different in the next couple weeks. We'll see. The committee is very interested in SEC bias, it almost feels like.
So listen, I don't mind Caesars Palace making Georgia an underdog against these top four teams. I think Ryan Leaf there, though, is a clown show. I think he's trying to make a name for himself and work his way up the TV ladder. He's at the bottom rung of that right now, and I guess if I was in his position, I'd do the same thing. But a win for Georgia on Saturday, adding another resume-type win to go along with Auburn last week, with what Leaf does mention there, Notre Dame and Florida. At that point in time, I think you have to take Georgia a lot more seriously, because Georgia will then have, you know, it's certainly right now it's got three top 25 wins. There are a lot of teams that have zero. Georgia and LSU have the most of anybody currently kind of in that discussion right now, and adding an A&M win to that I think is another resume bolstering performance. But guess what? Ryan Leaf and the folks at ESPN, not the only ones kind of doubting Georgia right now. You had Rick Neuheisel, who admittedly may have a little bit of west of the Mississippi bias given the fact that he coached at Colorado and coached at Washington, coached at UCLA. Well, currently he thinks there's another one loss team that might actually be better than Georgia, and it's one I think that'll make a lot of UGA fans kind of laugh a bit. Here is Neuheisel on his take on Georgia.
You guys stay with Georgia. We're going to stay with Utah. Utah's been outstanding, guys. They've only given up 17 explosive plays all season, and six of those were in those high fly balls against the Trojans. If they don't have that game, I know everybody says if they didn't, but I'm telling you, Utah's phenomenal, and their quarterback, Tyler Huntley, is Jake Fromm with legs.
They play today. Who wins?
Utah.
So listen, I mean, Neuheisel's a guy working at CBS who spent his entire career working out west. The fact that he touts Utah may not be that big of a surprise, but I can tell you this, Utah has played no one, beaten no one. I think Georgia fans would be okay to laugh at the notion that right now that Utah during the season has done anything to prove that it's better than Georgia. And frankly, it's another reason why Georgia fans, I think, should relish a chance to go out and play a quality opponent like Texas A&M on Saturday, hopefully collecting another resume improving win and a chance to say to Rick Neuheisel and Ryan Leaf and everybody else of, hey, you guys have been wrong about Georgia the entirety of the season. Georgia getting hot at exactly the right time. Now, with that in mind, Kirby Smart did kind of talk about that subject a bit this week. The idea that there are people out there saying bad things about Georgia. And this is obviously mostly geared towards the offense right now, because the offense has admittedly sputtered at times. And Kirby did admit that sometimes a chip on a shoulder can be a pretty valuable asset for a football team. But ultimately, the real motivation that leads to championships is actually probably something a little bit different than that. Here is Kirby Smart from this week.
Yeah, I think our whole team's that way. I think you play better when you have a chip on your shoulder. And I certainly think the defense and special teams would be in the same boat as the offense. If you're motivated, I always say this, intrinsically, not through what people say and write, because when you're motivated by that, it controls. And the narrative is, oh, well, everybody said bad things about Georgia, so then they started to play better. That's really not the case. The case is they've worked really hard to get better and improve. And sometimes the outcomes we have are based on what the opponent does, not based on what we do.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right from Kirby Smart, and I'll kind of say it this way. As I said before, you know, a chance to quiet doubters and shut up Rick Neuheisel or Ryan Leaf or anybody else is really more fun for the fans. For the team, though, I think the value of playing Texas A&M is about something different. For the intrinsic motivation and the kind of, I guess, bond this team is forming together, I think confidence aids that a lot. And another good performance this time back at home, maybe against a slightly easier defense to play than what Auburn was last week, I think that could potentially really add to Georgia's confidence level. A little extra dose of confidence might be a nice thing as you head towards the SEC championship and hopefully the college football playoff after that. One way or another, I think Saturday between Georgia and Texas A&M is a very interesting game. Georgia certainly has something at stake if it loses, but it also has a lot to gain if it wins, both for the team and maybe the fans who'd like to shut up some of these critics. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us, no matter how you get to us today. Live on video, 10 a.m., Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, radio at noon, of course, Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and as a podcast, wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. I want to take care of a couple pieces of business here. First of all, we got a really special guest going to join us in a moment, Billy Lucci, who covers the Texas A&M Aggies for TexAgs.com, big site there in College Station. He's going to be a part of our program today. Before that, can I make a quick announcement? We've told you already that Dog Nation's returning to Marlowe's the week of the SEC Championship game. going to be back at the Marlowe's location at Peachtree Corners, getting ready for a great event there that night at 6 p.m. Of course, it's December 5th. We're going to be there. Also, we've got a great VIP giveaway that we're going to do for this there as well. I want to make sure I tell you about this. You can register for your chance to win a VIP seating for four that night at our event on December 5th. Dinner for four that night, delicious chef-inspired Marlowe's food. Also, we're going to throw in a Dog Nation gift package for that there as well. So it's a really fun giveaway. We're doing a VIP experience for our Marlowe's matchup event the week of the SEC Championship game on Thursday, December 5th. Let me give you the let me go back and give you the email address here one more time. Go to dognationhelp.com. I'm sorry, let me read this one more time. dognationhelp@gmail.com. That's the email address. Register for your chance to win. dognationhelp@gmail.com. Just throw Marlowe's in the subject of the email or whatever. We'll know what it is. dognationhelp@gmail.com. Register for your chance to win a big VIP giveaway. We're going to notify the winner on December 3rd, and we'll see all of you at the Marlowe's in Peachtree Corners on December 5th for our Marlowe's matchup broadcast. Not just me. John Stinchcomb going to be there, the former UGL American. Jeff Sintel going to be there as well as we talk some recruiting and get ready for the SEC Championship. It's the it is the Peachtree Corners location. We need to make sure we check that. That's the Brookhaven location. We need to do Peachtree Corners for that big night before the SEC Championship game. So fun stuff coming up there. Let me also really quickly tell you about my friends at Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa. They are celebrating their 25th anniversary, and on select dates here this month and next, you can get 25% off when you use the promo code BVR25. That's BVR25 at BrasstownValley.com. That'll get you locked into what I think is one of the beautiful mountain resorts really anywhere. We're lucky to have it so close to the us here in the Atlanta area. BrasstownValley.com. Make sure you use the promo code BVR25. With that said, before we talk more about Texas A&M, let's kind of shift gears without a clutch here and do a little recruiting talk as we go around the doghouse presented by Online Trading Academy today. And I want to go back to yesterday's edition of Before the Hedges because I thought a couple of interviews that Jeff Sintel has done recently, really pretty interesting stuff about the current state of the 2020 class. First of all, one of the most outspoken members of that class for Georgia has been the running back commit Kendall Milton, kind of one of those Pied Piper leaders of this 2020 class. And he told Jeff there are still two names out there that he's really pushing to bring with him to Georgia. One of these you expect, one of them may be a surprise. Here is Kendall Milton on that topic.
I would say right now, striving for Elias and Keeley, you know, two of the top DBs in the country. I feel like they could come in and make that immediate impact and basically, you know, help us get to that, you know, lockdown secondary that we're striving for. So, you know, those are two dudes that have that dog type mentality to just get better every day.
So Elias Ricks is maybe a name you don't expect to hear there. Keeley Ringo, you obviously do. I think the Ricks thing may be more about just the friendship they have together. I don't expect Ricks to necessarily end up in this class. Be surprised if he did. But Ringo is obviously a name that Georgia fans certainly hope does end up being a part of this class. And the fact that Milton's still working on him, I think dog fans would take as pretty good news. Also, something else from Jeff Sintel on Before the Hedges yesterday. Kendall Milton on his thoughts of what happens if five-star linebacker Noah Sewell ends up being a part of this class. Here is more from Kendall on that.
It would be great having a guy like that, you know, on your team. It just makes everybody get better every day. You know, iron sharpens iron, so we're just battling every day trying to get better. So that would help us, you know, become a better team and help us get to a national championship.
Well, you couldn't say anything better than that. The idea of bringing in Noah Sewell to Georgia, if that were indeed happen, would certainly make it easier for Georgia to claim that national championship that fans crave so much. One more from the recruiting world and good stuff from Jeff Sintel when it comes to the four-star tight end Theo Johnson, who did postpone a commitment announcement the other day. Now going to take some time and deliberate on this a bit more. Georgia's a part of this, and of the four teams that are vying for Johnson services right now, Georgia's probably the team that throws two tight ends the least. However, Todd Hartley, the Georgia tight ends coach, says that will change once Theo's on campus, and Theo talked about wrestling with that decision and the nature of the pitch from Georgia. Here's good stuff from Theo Johnson.
I had a really good experience at Georgia, and every time I've been there, like, I really enjoyed myself, and, you know, like, I just really enjoyed, like, Georgia, like, the school itself, like, just the overall feel of like, just down south. Like, I just really liked, I just really liked it down there, and, like, I know that they haven't been able to do certain things with the tight ends because of they don't have the personnel right now and stuff. So I just think the big thing with Georgia, like, yeah, certain schools have like proven use of the tight ends and stuff like that. But the thing that interests me in with Georgia and keeps me like thinking about them is just like the possibility to kind of change like the tight end room, like change it to where like Georgia is starting to use tight ends more as a school, and some of the things that people say about other schools' tight ends, they start to say about Georgia tight ends. And that's something that definitely interests me about Georgia, to kind of change the culture and like change what people think about the tight ends coming out of there.
I definitely think it's a difficult recruitment for Georgia heading with the finish line for Theo Johnson. But it's really nice to hear him speaking positive words about changing that culture and making Georgia more of a destination for tight ends in the future. You love to hear that if you are a UGA fan. For more on Theo, Kendall Milton, everything else involving Georgia recruiting, make sure you check out Before the Hedges, presented by Kroger. It's at the Dog Nation YouTube page right now, or live every Wednesday at 3 p.m. It's Around the Doghouse, presented by Online Trading Academy. And, of course, Online Trading Academy provides you something that you desperately need, the chance to make more money in the markets. They'll teach you how the markets work. When they're going up, they're going down, they can always work in your favor. It's a great opportunity to invest in yourself. And Online Trading Academy provides you chances to learn both in the classroom and online across a spectrum of trading styles and a variety of asset classes. Online Trading Academy can take good care of you and set you up to give you the thing we all want, which is more money and more knowledge about how the markets work. So check out this website. It's tradingacademy.com/Atlanta. That's tradingacademy.com/Atlanta. That'll put you in touch with Online Trading Academy, and of course it's great to have them with us as a part of Around the Doghouse. All right, here's what's coming up later on in our program here today. We will hear more from Georgia coach Kirby Smart. You know, a Georgia defense that continues to be statistically pretty strong right now. What is the difference between this defense this year and the one from a year ago? Kirby Smart will talk about that. We'll update some key injuries here as well. But for now, on more on Georgia and Texas A&M on Saturday, let's talk to a guy who knows the Aggies very well. It's Billy Lucci from TexAggs.com. And I've been a big fan of TexAggs for a long time, doing a great job covering Texas A&M, even though I'm not an Aggies fan. I certainly appreciate the work they're doing in their corner of the SEC world, and it's kind of a good opportunity to finally get Georgia and Texas A&M on the same field together this upcoming Saturday. Billy Lucci, doing good stuff for TexAggs, joins us here on Dog Nation Daily. Billy, we really appreciate your time, and certainly glad to get your expertise here on Georgia's opponent for this upcoming Saturday.
Absolutely, Brandon. Good to be on, man. Looking forward to my first ever trip to Athens, and probably, I don't know how old we'll all be the next time A&M goes out there, but the way the SEC schedule goes, so really looking forward to Saturday.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious about, first of all, I hope it doesn't rain too much for you then, because I do think Athens will show you a good time if the weather will cooperate a little bit. But I'm also curious about this on the other side, because obviously Georgia fans have talked a good bit about that this week and have now been talking about this now for a while, that, you know, A&M's been in the league since 2012. This is the first time these two teams have played. Georgia's still not scheduled to go to College Station for a long time. I guess, what do Aggies fans think about the rarity of this matchup, and are they maybe interested in seeing these kinds of games a little bit more frequently than the current schedule allows for?
Yeah, the Aggie fans would love to see more of these. Absolutely. I mean, they play South Carolina every year, which means nothing to A&M fans, obviously, and that's the cross-division rivalry, or whatever they've called it. So, yeah, Aggie fans would love nothing more than to see I think they'd like to see it just rotate both, and would rather not see the need for a cross-division rival. Of course, there are some long-standing SEC cross-division rivalries that fans like probably Georgia don't want to see go away.
Yeah.
So it's tough, but maybe, you know, I know on the A&M side of it, they'd like to see more of the places like Athens and Gainesville and Knoxville a little more often than they do. I mean, actually, a lot more often.
Has it been hard for A&M to establish rivalries? I know that, you know, Texas A&M LSU feels like a little bit of a rivalry, but it's not traditional. I guess Arkansas may be more of a traditional rivalry dating back to the old Southwest Conference. What's it been like for Texas A&M to make itself feel at home in the SEC?
LSU is getting there, but A&M had to beat them. You know, they had lost. That's the natural rivalry, and No, Aggie wants to hear it, but Arkansas is too. You know, when you've been playing that game in Dallas every year, and it's the old, you're an old Southwest Conference rival. You know, LSU and A&M used to play pretty much every year. So things like that make those rivalries. But A&M has to start beating LSU, and A&M's beaten Arkansas every year. So they're 1-6 against LSU since joining the conference, and they're 7-0, or I guess now they're 8-0 against Arkansas since joining the league. So there hasn't been a whole lot. You've seen it a little more in baseball. I think it just goes down to A&M being really good. They've had some great games with Alabama, believe it or not. And I wouldn't say great. They've had two great ones, but they've had several that have been, you know, where A&M's surprisingly been right there in it within a score or 10 points in the fourth quarter. They've been competitive against Bama, I guess. There could be some rivalry stuff there as well. It's just like with LSU-Bama, that's an amazing rivalry, right? Well, it's amazing because they had Nick Saban, both of them, and because they're both really, really good and have been for the last, you know, 15 years or so. But prior to that, did anyone care about LSU-Bama when they had, you know, Curly Hallman and Mike Shula or whoever it was? So it's both. So it, now that they've got Jimbo Fisher, there's a lot of interesting stuff that comes into play. You've got the Fisher Saban. You've got, is A&M going to be able to climb that ladder and be in that upper echelon here, I think, you know, starting next year and moving forward? Are they going to take that step? And if they do, then, yeah, that LSU one becomes really interesting because that's the coach LSU wanted.
Yeah.
And LSU's got A&M's AD and the 74-72 game. And, you know, this year A&M will be a heavy underdog. But, you know, maybe you have to go in there and win that game. Who knows? Whatever it takes, you know, and then maybe you'll start to have some rivalries. But, no, they haven't really had that. But I can tell you this. To a man, A&M fans would rather be in the SEC than in the Big 12. And if that meant the rivalry with Texas going away, the overwhelming majority of them are okay with that.
So you mentioned Jimbo Fisher. And, you know, to my the best I can tell from the outside looking in, Texas A&M is a good team that's played a really tough schedule. They're beating the teams they're supposed to, for the most part, handling them pretty easy. They're undefeated against the spread, for instance, as a 10-plus point favorite at home. So they're handling the games they're supposed to win. But that big breakthrough win, maybe with the exception of LSU a year ago, Jimbo hasn't quite gotten yet. What's the mood around A&M fans right now with Jimbo? They're satisfied with the progress that's being made here? They feel good about the upward trajectory? What's the feeling around Texas A&M fans as they get ready to play Georgia on Saturday?
Yeah, no, I think they feel great about it. And I think it's been remarkable to see, because fan bases aren't patient. They usually don't go and kind of see the big picture. But I think everyone knew that with this schedule and with A&M starting one senior out of 22 and losing 10 guys to the NFL, that this was a tough formula. And I think the big thing that Jimbo needed to do this year, the Auburn game was kind of the one on the schedule that you look as the toss-up. And they weren't real competitive in that when they came back and made it an 8-point game. They just got off to a really bad start in the first quarter. They gave up a reverse for a touchdown. That was just, they completely blew. And that was the one week where you kind of felt some impatience. You're down 21-3 at home. But A&M recovered. You know, they played a lot better against Bama. But more importantly, right now, they didn't lose any game they shouldn't. And under Jimbo, you know, he's 11-3 at home, including that LSU win over a top 10 team, broke that LSU streak, won a bowl game. The last 2 years they've been much better in November, beat number 12 Kentucky at home. And he's 10-1 against Mississippi State, Ole Miss, Arkansas, South Carolina, and Kentucky. And that doesn't sound like much, but Georgia understands how difficult that is, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, to go 10-1 in that group in these first 2 years was very, very important because, you know, just like you said, when you look at this year's schedule, man, you can't be giving one away that you're favored in. And they did not do that. And if you had told me before the year, hey, they're going to go undefeated against the Mississippi schools, South Carolina, and Arkansas, I would say, well, that's good because they have to.
Yeah,
and it's not an easy thing to do. And they did that. So I think had they lost one of those, maybe the tone would be a little different. But everybody's fired up because they know how he's recruiting. He went third-rate class last year, and I don't count Texas in that because those people that run those networks tend to skew the numbers for them, and they signed a guy. Well, they sign a five-star after signing date, and they count him towards the class, and then, you know, he signs at USC, and then he leaves before ever, you know, going through a practice there, sure. And then they still count his points. So anyway, their class was the third best in college football behind Bama and Georgia last year. And then this year they're sitting right now at number six or seven. The way he's recruiting, again, the guys he has coming back, and look, you're going to replace Georgia and Clemson on the schedule next year with Colorado and Vanderbilt. So if you look ahead, it's pretty exciting about what A&M can do and what they look like they're poised to do.
You mentioned recruiting. I want to try to squeeze in a recruiting question before we're done here. Let me do one more before I get there. Obviously, Kirby Smart this week, really complimentary of Kellen Mond and the work that Jimbo Fisher has done with him. We've seen Jimbo tutor quarterbacks to great success at the college level before. So what's that, I guess, partnership going to be like for Georgia? Fisher, who knows the quarterback game, Mond, who seems to be really rounding into form right now. How tough is Mond going to be for Georgia to stop on Saturday?
McCallum's been quietly really good in the SEC this year. He had a bad game against Clemson, as did the whole offense. And it's like people just kind of forgot about him. Kellen Mond right now is averaging over 300 yards a game total offense. He hadn't played the last couple of fourth quarters, really, other than handing the ball off a few times. And over 300 yards a game and 16 touchdowns versus three turnovers in SEC games. So he's quietly playing really good football, and it's really changed for him and this offense when they started running him and letting him run the football. He's really started to put pressure on defenses. And if they're going to give Georgia any problems defensively, because that offense is so – I mean, that defense is so good over there in Athens, it will have to start, I believe, with Kellen running the football, Kellen tucking it, and, you know, picking up yards and putting Georgia defenders on their heels a little bit, maybe beating that pass rush that's been – I know Georgia doesn't have a ton of sacks, but I know they get after the quarterback. I've watched them. And, you know, by Kellen just dropping back and going, and then also in the designed running game where they can kind of get an extra blocker, and he's a bigger dude than you think. You know, he's every bit of 6'3 and about 225. That's when he starts causing problems, and that's when things tend to open up for the offense. If you watch him, he's made some pretty spectacular throws this year as well. So he can fit it into an opening. He can make any kind of the throws. He is a, you know, they say dual threat, and it's always a guy that can run, so he gets called dual threat. Kellen is a true dual threat. He can beat you throwing, standing back in the pocket, throwing the football, and he can beat you running it. So He's the guy that makes it go for the Aggies because they're not great up front, but when they can get that extra blocker with him in the running game and they can go two backs with him as a running threat as well, and when he can just kind of create some things on his own, that's when he's kind of the great equalizer for this offense, and he's what's led to this turnaround. They start off, they ran for 53 yards against Clemson and 56 against Auburn. And it's gone up every game since, including Bama. They ran for like 320 this week. You know they're not going to get that this weekend against Georgia, but I think the litmus test will be, can they double up on that, you know, 56 against Auburn? Because if they can, then I think they've got something to work with because they've got receivers and tight end that can make plays too.
Let me squeeze in one final thing before I let you go. Georgia needs probably two running backs for its 2020 class. It's got a good one on board right now in Kendall Milton from California, but a lot of Georgia fans are really hoping to hear some good news on Zachary Evans, the five-star running back from Houston, who, you know, I was always thinking the relationship between he and Texas A&M was a little weird because he didn't mention them as a public finalist but then took visits to A&M after that. I always assumed the Aggies were going to get back involved on this, and it seems like certainly the relationship between Evans and Georgia has really kind of softened at this point in time. I guess maybe now LSU is considered the leader based on the online chatter. But, you know, your people that cover recruiting, do they have any kind of, you know, take or insight on Evans right now? What has been kind of a strange recruitment? He's seemingly been close to committing a couple times, then didn't do it. You know, maybe not as in love with the in-state schools as maybe some folks there in the Lone Star State would have probably liked or expected. What do your people say about Zachary Evans, if anything, right now?
He was never close to committing to A&M, and we kept reporting that, and people were saying that, and it was kind of like, kind of a disservice to the A&M fans, I thought, because they were getting all fired up, and kind of a disservice, but you know how it is for the coaching staff.
Sure.
It's all this false hype that they're sitting there knowing not going to happen. He wasn't close to doing that, but he was close to doing it for Georgia. I remember that deal too. All I said the whole time was Zach Evans, just let it play out. The reason he loves A&M so much. And he's never really talked about it, but he has his relationship with Jimbo Fisher. There's no other relationship with a coach to compare to it. I mean, I think Jimbo's taken a personal interest in him from day one, part for the obvious reasons, but also because he just enjoyed recruiting him. And they talk all the time and are very close. And that's been why A&M has been where they've been at with him. Plus, it's close. I mean, it is from Houston. You're at A&M in a clean hour and a half from where he lives, and maybe even less. So it's easy to get to. And when they play certain games here that he wants to come to, he comes. And he officially visited this past weekend, and A&M's right there. And I think right now it's A&M LSU. It used to be A&M Georgia. You know, there's something to be said for the fact that A&M been kind of the, even though it hadn't been on the surface, they've kind of been the constant and never gone away in this thing. So you've seen enough of those that when that happens, you just never know. But if I was picking today, I would say LSU, but I would tell you don't pick it yet because anything can happen, including Georgia. I think you'd be nuts to count out anybody in this race. I think it's just going to go through the early signing date, and it's almost like there'll be a whole second recruitment of him come January.
That'll certainly be an interesting thing to watch. Billy Lucci, TexAgs.com. For Dog fans who may want to find out more about the opponent this Saturday and undoubtedly some recruiting overlap here in future years, how can people get in touch with the work you guys are doing there at TexAgs?
You can just message us at, you can go Billy@TexAgs.com and get to me directly. That's probably the easiest way to do it.
All right, good stuff. Billy, thanks so much for being here on Dog Nation Daily here today. Hope you enjoy your trip to Athens. I look forward to seeing you there on Saturday and hopefully having you back on the show again very soon as well.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Good stuff there. Billy Lucci, TexAgs.com. A little bit of an interesting insight on the thing with Zachary Evans, and obviously that's going to come, you know, from you know, his readership is obviously Aggies fan, so he's going to talk about that from the perspective of Texas A&M. But it is fair to say that throughout the entirety of this process, I have never assumed that A&M was out of this, even though that's what the public chatter would lead you to believe. You know, certainly it seems like at one point in time George was on the doorstep with Evans, and then one way or another that kind of fizzled out for whatever reason or the other. So interesting to hear from kind of a different perspective, maybe the opposite perspective, if you will, on Texas A&M. And also Billy there confirms what we've kind of also been hearing more as of late, that as Georgia's connection with Evans has kind of dissolved a bit, the connection that Evans has with LSU would seem to have picked up a little steam here lately. So pretty interesting stuff from Billy Lucci from TexAgs.com on all of that with the recruiting stuff and also the game on Saturday coming to Texas A&M. Let me kind of now shift gears back to the Georgia side of all of this. And one of the key storylines for the Dogs on Saturday will be injuries. And with that in mind, we do our Ortho Atlanta injury report. Kirby Smart pretty forthcoming about a couple of guys on Monday and then following up with more on Lawrence Cager on Tuesday. So let's kind of work our way through all of that right now, including in addition to Cager, a little bit of concern about a couple of offensive linemen at the moment. Here is Kirby Smart on that.
I'll give a couple updates on the injuries. I don't ever know exactly who you're asking about, but the Cade is banged up. Don't think he's going to be able to practice today, but we think he's going to be able to play, and he's going to be able to hopefully practice Tuesday. Ben is still fighting the injury bug, too, on lower extremity. We're hopeful he's able to go, and then Cager will be cleared to practice, just be a matter of whether he can sustain.
So that's the situation there on a couple of those guys. Obviously, the offensive line thing continues to be a little bit of a concern, just given the fact that, you know, let's face it, Georgia has been forced to rotate a bunch of guys there this season. The fact they've been able to do so with as many five stars off the bench they have, Mays included, Jamari Salyerman called upon there as well, is obviously a luxury for UGA. And there was a guy last week that we had concerns about, Trey Hill. Actually, all things being equal, probably had a pretty good game against Auburn, although there were certainly some moments with those Auburn defensive linemen. Overall, looked like Hill held up pretty well. But another week where you're talking a bit about injuries to the Georgia offensive line and who's able to go and who's able to go maybe for the entirety of the game. As far as the Lawrence Cager thing goes there, you heard that from Kirby. What I heard from him on Tuesday as well, to me, just to be honest, doesn't sound quite so hopeful. Here is Kirby on Cager.
He's been good. I mean, I wouldn't say he's been as good as he was the last couple weeks, but he's repped, he's practiced. We're trying to help him recover.
So I don't have to tell you this. He says he's maybe not quite as good now as he's been the last couple of weeks, when really he wasn't able to be much of a factor in the Auburn game after making a catch there early in the first quarter. We didn't see much more from him after that. So not exactly the most hopeful tone there for Kirby Smart when it comes to Lawrence Cager. And there is no doubt about it that Cager, healthy for a full game, has just made the Georgia offense different. So on Saturday, if I could only go off of what I just heard from Kirby Smart right there, it certainly sounds like that playing without Cager, maybe some of the Georgia offense has to figure out a way to do once again. That's our Ortho Atlanta Injury Report, brought to you by our friends at Ortho Atlanta. And boy, they are all over the place doing great work for you. 14 locations throughout Metro Atlanta with orthopedic care for sport and sports medicine for the whole family, including seniors and kids. 39 physicians, over 450 employees dedicated to your patient care. That includes in-house physical therapy, MRI imaging, outpatient surgery, and after-hours orthopedic care for seniors, for kids, for little leaguers, weekend warriors, professional athletes, college athletes, everyone in between. Now, it's been said that a good orthopedist can kind of get you back in the game, but Ortho Atlanta does more than that. They get you back your quality of life, which is really, really important. That's why my advice, and frankly all of Dog Nation, recommends Ortho Atlanta, which means you need to find them on the web at orthoatlanta.com. That's right, orthoatlanta.com. That'll get you in touch with Ortho Atlanta.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, let's get ready to cruise around the SEC. Brought to you today by Royal Caribbean. And, man, you know, this is the time of year where, obviously, I love the college football season. I love the month of November turning in December most of all. But it's also that time you start to think, ooh, maybe a vacation on the horizon. Well, if you're thinking the same thing, there's no better vacation choice than our friends at Royal Caribbean. And whether it be one of the brand new ships they're introducing into their fleet or one of the amplified ships like the Oasis of the Seas, which is going to be bigger and better than ever before. This is something you're going to want to check out online at RoyalCaribbean.com. You can see the Ultimate Abyss, the largest, tallest water slide at sea, all kinds of entertainment dining options like Playmaker Sports Bar and Arcade, the Music Hall, the Lime and the Coconut, the Bionic Bar, which is like a robotic arm type thing that'll actually, you know, make your drink, serve it for you. It's just a really, really fun experience, whether it be couples, the entire family, really for everyone in your kind of friends and family group. There's really no better choice for just an ultimate bold vacation experience than with our friends at Royal Caribbean. So find them online at RoyalCaribbean.com. Learn more about the all-new amplified Oasis of the Seas. You can kind of do some window shopping there, or you can also get in touch with a travel advisor and do what I need to do, what we all need to do, plan a vacation, get ready to enjoy yourself. RoyalCaribbean.com, great way to do that. All right, let's do a couple of things here. The fallout kind of continues from what went down with Tua Tagovailoa's injury this past Saturday. First of all, I saw where Todd McShay, in his top 32 available for the 2020 draft, which obviously includes juniors who could be eligible to go, Tua Tagovailoa was second on that list pre-injury. He's now 13th on the list after the injury. Now, McShay's just one guy. This is not necessarily scientific, but it does give you a sense about how everything will be reevaluated around Tua now that he's injured. And if he's moving down, that means other quarterbacks could be moving up, and obviously it's at least worth considering that one of those could be Georgia's Jake Fromm. I also thought it was interesting to see Marty Smith come to Saban's defense here this week, saying, you know, Nick Saban doesn't deserve any blame whatsoever for what happened with Tua Tagovailoa. Saban is torn up over this. And, you know, obviously on this show, we were not very quick to blame Nick Saban for really anything other than sort of trying to point the fingers of blame at someone else after the injury took place. We don't think that Saban necessarily contributed to the hip injury for Tua Tagovailoa, but it just goes to show you, when you've been as cozy with ESPN as Saban has over the last couple of years, you know, I've called him Stephen A. Saban because he seems to show up on ESPN as much as he does. Remember the thing about a year or so ago when he's playing pickup basketball, horse, whatever it was, with Marty Smith? you know, not all that surprising to see now one of the same people who's been granted incredible access to Nick Saban explaining why critics are wrong for saying bad things about Nick Saban. Listen, you know, people respond to incentives. ESPN's got an incentive to have Saban on TV as much as they can have him. Obviously, Saban sees an incentive there in that as well. Sometimes the coverage can be a little cozy when you kind of play the game, and Alabama has certainly played the game with ESPN as of late. By the way, speaking of a controversy that will not go away, the South Carolina president has had to issue another statement about what he allegedly told SC News Now about his athletic director, Ray Tanner, reaching out to Florida State about how it managed a buyout for Willie Taggart, the coach they just fired. And the latest statement, what we presume is the final word on all of this, is that the university president of South Carolina says he misunderstood the question. After the audio was released of him saying exactly what he alleged that he didn't say, he now says, well, I guess I did say it, but I misunderstood the question. All this is related to the fact that South Carolina publicly has stood behind Will Muschamp. Maybe stood beside him is the better way to say that. But privately, apparently, at least talking with the possibility of moving on from Muschamp, which obviously potentially cuts him out at the knees with his fans, his donors, potential recruits of the 2020 class, including guys like Jordan Birch. So obviously, South Carolina is motivated not to have their private inner workings become public, and it would not have been if the university president hadn't shot off his mouth. This is kind of a weird, weird scenario kind of all the way around. We are in kind of coaching carousel season, coaching rumor season, but one name you can apparently scratch off the list in terms of not coming, or I should say being fired at the end of the season, is Derek Mason. Apparently, according to a number of reports, including the Tennessean there in Nashville, Mason is returning to Vanderbilt for 2020, and I think this is probably overall better, the best decision to make. I think that Mason's one of those guys, if Vanderbilt fired him, Mason would find a new job somewhere before Vanderbilt found an acceptable head coach. I just think that, you know, as bad as things have been, the overall, I guess, brand of Derek Mason is probably a little bit better than the brand of Vanderbilt, so I understand why they're not moving on from him. And this is not an official SEC through cruiser on the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean story, but let me squeeze this in right quick. I meant to put this in and forgot to. This is a follow-up to a story from yesterday. So we talked about Michael Divinity, the LSU linebacker, returning for LSU. However, Nick Ed Orgeron, the LSU coach, made it clear yesterday when he spoke to reporters that Divinity, if he does play this year, would not be eligible to play until like the national championship game. So Divinity coming back is not a factor in the SEC championship game. He did not play against Alabama. He's been dealing with a personal issue, and apparently he wouldn't play against Georgia in the SEC championship game either, according to what Ed Orgeron had to say yesterday. We'll make that cruise around the SEC courtesy of our friends at Royal Caribbean. And here on Dog Nation Daily, let's turn our attention back to Georgia and Texas A&M on Saturday. And, you know, I talked earlier in the show about the Texas A&M game, despite the fact that it's a tough opponent, despite the fact that some Georgia fans have some angst about the game, that what it really provides for UGA is a bit of an opportunity. And I think that's true on both sides of the ball, an opportunity for the offense to gain some confidence by putting some plays together, and a chance for the defense to once again establish what has been a cemented brand this year of really few defenses in America are stingier on a regular basis than Georgia is. We just heard from Billy Lucci from Tex Ags about how good Kellen Mond has been for the most part in SEC play this season. Getting a chance to go out there and stifle him and keep Aggies to a low point total would be another big line on the resume for the Georgia defense this season. And as far as a group that's been good all year long, Kirby Smart was asked this week about, you know, what makes this defense different this year than the one that you had, you know, a year ago. And boy, Smart said some interesting things, including tossing some praise Dan Lanning's way. This is pretty interesting stuff from Smart on his defense, which has been so good this year. Take a listen to this.
I think Dan's done a good job. This is no knock on Mel, because I'm as much responsible for it as anything. Dan's done a good job of bringing, whether it's new ideas, less risk averse. We got secondary back. I mean, when you got a new secondary and you got true freshmen or sophomore that haven't played back there making a lot of calls. Last year's defense was almost so completely new, because if you go back to the year before that, there were kids that had played for 3 and 4 years off that team that went to the national championship. So it was a tough year defensively, man. You were holding on every time somebody moved or motioned. This year, you feel more comfortable being aggressive, and we're reaping the benefits of experience.
So a couple things from me on this. First of all, on the point of the secondary, having some experience there this season, I think that matters for Georgia. And it's worth pointing out that we really haven't seen the expected starters on the field together too much as of late. But once Tyson Campbell's back fully healthy again, now I thought the DJ Daniel did a pretty good job against Auburn on Saturday. But once once Campbell is back fully healthy again, I think this is really probably the best secondary that Smart has had at Georgia. And I include the one last year that had the Thorpe Award winner, DeAndre Baker. I'm talking about as a group overall, this may be the best when it's fully healthy. It's certainly probably the deepest overall. I think Smart's probably correct to point that out. The other thing is, remember when we first became aware that Dan Lanning was going to be the defensive coordinator? You know, Georgia was very quiet about that. Didn't want to roll that out. Didn't want to make some sort of major announcement. For the most part, just kind of almost swept that under the rug like a traditional Friday news dump. They just didn't put a lot of attention on Lanning as being the DC. But here we are kind of later in the year, and certainly whether it's Lanning earning more of Kirby Smart's trust or Kirby Smart just feeling better about touting Lanning as his defensive coordinator because he's so young, certainly Lanning is getting more attention, more credit now than he did when he first got the job. So we are in the process, I think, of seeing a coach grow up before our eyes in terms of reputation, actual impact on the field. This is one of a few times lately where Smart has really kind of tossed some compliments his way, and I think that's at least interesting, worth paying attention to. And I am very eager to see this defense back on the field again on Saturday with a better offense, good coach who coaches up quarterbacks well, a dangerous quarterback in Kellen Mond. Can the Georgia defense go out and be stingy once again? If so, then this Georgia team is going to be difficult for anyone to do battle with. December, January is the games really heat up towards the race for a national championship. All right, with that in mind, let's kind of take a look at some of the other games happening around college football here this weekend. I think a better schedule than it maybe appears to be on paper. We'll do these as part of our MyBookie Best Bets. Of course, we'll have more of this on Go With The Flow this Friday with Connor Riley and Dari Payer and the entire Dog Nation staff. But here's an early look at some of these lines. Within SEC play, LSU trying to clinch the SEC West. They are a 43.5-point favorite over Arkansas. I think it's really hard to take anybody by that big of a number, even a team like LSU that may be in a bad mood after what happened to it a week ago. A little closer than it was supposed to be against Ole Miss. 43.5 is a lot. The Tennessee-Missouri game just jumps off the page at you. Missouri favored by 5. Nothing about that seems right based on the way these two teams have played as of late. Don't forget, though, for the most part this season, Missouri has been good at home. However, not good last week against Florida. Outside the SEC, Ohio State-Penn State, the game of the day. Buckeyes, though, a huge favorite. They're 18 right now over the Nittany Lions. Baylor trying to bounce back after a loss to Texas. They're a 5.5-point favorite. I should say after a loss to Oklahoma in comeback fashion. 5.5 against Texas. The Bears are favored. And then Michigan trying to get one more win against Indiana as an 8.5-point road favorite before the big showdown with Ohio State next week. Those are your MyBookie best bets. And don't forget that you can check out MyBookie. Simply type it in your browser, MyBookie. Type that in your browser, and then use the promo code DOGNATION. You get a big-time first deposit bonus. You can get your first deposit doubled. You can get up to $1,000, I think it is. And you can really be a winner before you even win your first bet because there'll be more money in your account. But you've got to use the promo code DOGNATION. That's all one word. Spelled the way it's supposed to be, D-A-W-G. Use the promo code DOGNATION. It'll get in touch with my friends at MyBookie and then get that big first deposit bonus. Find MyBookie online, use the promo code DOGNATION, and then after that you play, you win, you get paid. A couple quick congratulations here. UGA basketball team, nice win last night over Georgia Tech, although it was a bad beat for anybody who had the gambling line on that one after a 3 at the buzzer by Georgia Tech, but a good game there for Anthony Edwards and the Dogs. Also, Brendan Todd, I've been meaning to mention this, wins the Mayakoba Classic. Big time comeback for him after having some real struggles leading up to that. And of course, Gator Hater Updater, 1,118 days. We will see you tomorrow right back here for Dog Nation Daily.